Gospel, the fifth chapter, verses 21 through 26. In characteristic rabbinic fashion, Jesus is taking a commandment and then explicating what it means. And Jesus is fairly rigid when it comes to these explications. Listen now for a word from God to the church this day. You have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, you shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment. But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say, you fool, you will be liable to the hell of fire. So when you are offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are on the way to court with him, or your accuser may hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the guard, and you will be thrown into prison. Truly, I tell you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Please pray with me. O God, uphold me that I may uplift thee. Amen. When I was 5 years old, I lived for a year in rural South Carolina, where my brother and I were allowed to run wild through the forest. At least that's my memory as a five-year-old. It was probably just a stand of trees across from the house, but as a five-year-old, it was a magical forest with abandoned tractor gear that served as our rocket ship, monster truck, and Super Friends Hall of Justice. One day, our neighbors-to-be got a mountain of gravel dumped on the lot across the street where their home would soon rise from the soil. I'm told that we were told to stay away from the gravel. But what kid living across the street from a perfectly climbable mountain of gravel is going to stay off of it? To do so would be to reject childhood itself. So my brother and I jumped and jumped and jumped until the mountain deflated and deflated and deflated to roughly the size of a small speed bump. And that night, the phone rang. It was our neighbor-to-be. The gravel that needed to remain in a pile for some reason, obviously a ridiculous reason to any five-year-old, was going to require machinery to come in and undo the damage that had been done. Did my parents know how this might have happened? Under pressure, my brother fessed up with his usual words to my parents. It was his idea. And then they dropped the kicker. My brother and I had to call up the people we had wronged and apologize to them. Right then, I was petrified. Call up strangers and admit this right now? I protested. How about tomorrow? I cried. I threw a temper tantrum. My parents were unmoved. Call them now or go pick your switch. Remember, this is rural South Carolina. In the end, the phone call wasn't actually that difficult. My brother and I stammered and stuttered, but we got out a sufficient apology. It was the willingness to make the call that was so difficult. The willingness to own up to our indiscretion. Part of me remembers almost preferring a spanking to making that phone call. Steps 7 and 8 in the 12 steps are all about that kind of willingness. Step 7, humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings. Step 8, made a list of all the persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. The willingness to ask God for help, the willingness to make amends to people we have harmed. The Bible often speaks of this humility in a positive light. God delights when we ask for help. God rejoices when we decide not to try to take on everything ourselves. And when we do come to God, how often great burdens are lifted from our shoulders. Do not worry about anything, Paul writes, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. Paul writes these words while he is in prison. Do not worry about anything. Imagine writing those words from prison. Asking for God's help is good for us and good for God. Now, if I were sitting in your pew right now, I would anticipate right now, toward the beginning of the sermon, that the conclusion of this sermon is that a good Christian should be willing to ask for God's help, and a good person should be willing to make amends to people we have harmed. Exhortation complete, we can all go home. There is probably some gospel truth to that kind of exhortation. But AA approaches it differently. Do you want to be healed? If so, then here are the steps that will lead you there. Ask God to remove your shortcomings. Be willing to make amends. But it is your choice. If you do not want to be healed, that is a real choice. If you don't think that you need healing, that is your choice. If you don't see that you have wronged anyone, then don't apologize for anything. Keep doing what it is that you are doing. It is your choice. We cannot and will not choose it for you. Judgment of any kind is not permitted inside AA meetings. When someone else is sharing, no crosstalk is allowed. There, as far as I can tell, there are no gasps, no eye rolls, no offerings of advice or direction. The minute somebody smells judgment, the group shuts it down. You are invited to do hard work only by observing the healing that results in the lives of others. You cannot be pressured into healing. It does not work. You have to want it for yourself. I think this is probably the hardest lesson that loved ones of alcoholics have to learn if there is any hope of their spouse or their parent or their child or their friend getting better. Some call it tough love, but actually, it's really just love. To recognize that you cannot choose for someone else what they are unwilling to choose for themselves. They have to come to the conclusion that they need it. They have to come to the conclusion that they want it. This is especially true when it comes to making amends with people that you have harmed. You have to really want that. When people try to skip this step, they often end up creating worse problems in relationships. There is nothing worse than someone who's not fully decided that they have actually done anything wrong come to you and make a half-hearted apology. You know the kind I'm talking about. I'm sorry that you feel that way. I apologize if I offended anyone. The word "if" doesn't belong in any real apology, because as any alcoholic in recovery knows, you cannot get forgiveness from someone at the same time that you are avoiding taking responsibility for behavior that has injured them. Or as Richard Rohr puts it, it is a self-serving concern just to alleviate your own guilt. It is a loving question to say, how can I free others of theirs? I think this is why Jesus teaches the disciples that you can't really be reconciled to God if you haven't tended to the wounds that you've created in others. And I don't think it is a punishment or a threat. It is just a fact. If hurt comes between you and another, it will still be there with you and God. And that hurt, AA teaches, really has its deepest roots inside of you, which is why steps 7 and 8 are intertwined, just as Jesus teaches that loving God and loving your neighbor are inextricable from each other. In Matthew's gospel, Jesus connects this teaching to the commandment against murder. It's like Rabbi Jesus is saying, the first step toward murder is denying the legitimacy of another person's pain or of their personhood. It is allowing your own needs to become so huge and all-encompassing that they obliterate another's. That sin that stands in the way of every real relationship, that sin, I would say, in all of us that needs healing. And here is why this sermon can't end with exhortation, because the heart of the gospel is not that we get close to God by making ourselves better than anyone else. It is not even that we get close to God by removing our shortcomings ourselves or by bringing about reconciliation through our own acts of apology to people we have harmed. That is still putting ourselves back at the center of everything and just attaching God's name to it. No, the heart of the gospel is that we fully entrust ourselves to God. We don't let fear get in the way of admitting our shortcomings. We don't let fear prevent us from owning up to our responsibility for the hurt that we have caused others. We are willing to be humbled. That is the only way to healing, at least the only way through Christ of the cross. Part of the training I received as a pastor was visiting patients in the hospital setting. The hardest part of the work was the required group processing. Each week, one of us brought to the group a verbatim transcript of a conversation that we had had with a patient as best we could remember it. Important details were edited to protect patient confidentiality, and the focus was never on the patient, but always on the pastor in training. When a patient brought up fears about dying, why did one of us try to change the subject? Which fears of ours were getting in the way of walking with this patient as she found the courage to discuss her own death? When a patient shared disdain for a spouse, why did we try to contradict that person instead of encouraging the patient to be more self-reflective and follow those thoughts down to their source? What were we afraid that this person might reveal? When a patient shared a theological view that was not our own, why did we feel the need to contradict or to let it slide? These meetings were humbling because it was impossible to hide yourself, the parts of your person you were proud of and the parts that needed to see more light of day. But that didn't stop us from trying. I remember one person from my group who I'll call Kathy. She was second career and often reminded us of it. Most of Kathy's answers to questions began with something like, well, since I have so much experience with X, Y, or Z, then I'm able to be this or do that or say such or say this. It was as annoying as it sounds. And then one day, our supervisor interrupted our group session to ask Kathy a single question. When was the last time you learned something new? The question hung in the air for so long that it still makes me sad to think about it. God wants our whole selves, a real relationship. And that is incredibly good news. But a real relationship means all of us. The parts that you're proud of and the parts you've found impossible to change. A real relationship means that we have to be humbled before we can be healers. Otherwise, Jesus warns, we will use even the act of helping itself to reward our own ego, to elevate ourselves above others. The iron rule of community organizing is something that you learn early in the training. It is reinforced again and again in community work. It is simply this: never do for others what they are unwilling to do for themselves. For individuals who want to be leaders and change their communities, the teaching goes, we will walk through fire together. We will speak truth to power. We will cross boundaries together, but we won't do it for you. In fact, to try to do for someone instead of with someone robs them of their dignity, their agency, and ultimately of their humanity. It is you deciding that you know what's best for someone else, which outside of a healthy parent-child relationship is really just another form of playing God. I think AA and community organizing would both say that this kind of paternalism works against someone's healing and not for it. Unless anyone who is financially privileged think that this iron rule only applies to people less fortunate than you, remember that Jesus says it is easier for a camel to get through the eye of the needle than it is for a rich person to enter heaven. The path toward healing for rich and poor alike is a way of humility where all true power is found. And that is why this sermon doesn't end with an exhortation any more than AA does. If there is healing from this God, and I believe that there is, it comes in the form of real relationship. You can choose the way of humility offered by Jesus, instructed by AA, or you can keep on doing what you're doing. The church's best evangelism is not unrealistic promises of prosperity in this life, nor is it threats of some otherworldly punishment to come. The church's good news is real people who have found real healing in the way of Jesus, simply sharing the freedom and the joy that they have found and are still finding in this real relationship with God.